generally, my recommendation would be honest with yourself about what content you've produced. A lot of times you get upset about, and believe me, I've been in this position, you know, being negatively impacted by an algorithm update. But when you really like take a breath and look at the content that was impacted, a lot of times, 95% of the time, it's not as good as it could have been. And so the first question in my mind would be, is all of the content you've produced on your site negatively impacted or not? Actually what you think you should have produced to speak to the users or the demo or however you think about potential customers that you want to. And if not, obviously you can trim stuff. And if it is, then create a framework to improve the content in a way that's actually meaningful for users and try to forget about the algorithm while you're going through that process.
Hi, and welcome to the Optimize Podcast. My name is Nate Matherson, and I'm your host. On this weekly podcast, we sit down with some of the smartest minds in content marketing and SEO. Our goal is to give you perspective and insights on what's moving the needle in organic search. Today, I'm thrilled to sit down with Brett Ferris, the co-founder and CEO of Vital Brands. And before launching Vital Brands, Brett spent 12 plus years at Clearlink, where he became the COO of Clearlink Digital Media. If you don't know Clearlink, know that they're a powerhouse SEO shop with some fantastic properties. I'm pumped for today's episode. Brett and I will chat about his experience building and scaling SEO channels in some fantastic industries ranging from consumer finance to business and even cable. And I also want to chat about the work he's doing at Vital Brands, helpful content, and so much more. And this episode of the Optimize Podcast is brought to you by Positional. You probably know by now that our public launch is on March 26th, but there's still time to take advantage of beta pricing and beta perks by signing up for our private beta ahead of the public launch. You can book a time with me to learn more about the private beta on our website at positional.com, or you can reach out to me directly at nate@positional.com. We've got a number of tools for content marketing and SEO teams, and we'd love for you to check it out. Brett, thank you so much for coming on the Optimize Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nate. Excited to chat.
The question that I ask all of our guests is, how did you get into the world of content marketing and SEO?
I figured you may ask something like that. And so I thought about it. And it's easy to create a narrative when you're looking back, you know what I mean? I don't know that it was as smooth as I'm going to say it now, but I always had an interest in marketing growing up. My mother was in marketing and I was kind of obsessed with like advertising. And anyways, given my age and sort of the time I entered my career, which was 07, 08, the internet in terms of marketing was still pretty nascent. So I saw that as a pretty big opportunity when I was exiting college and got an internship with an e-commerce kind of startup. They had done some acquisitions and were trying to build a little conglomerate of B2B e-com businesses. And I did kind of anything and everything there. And then eventually saw there was a huge opportunity to improve our rankings and drive free traffic because we were paying for a lot of our traffic at the time. And worked with an agency. And from there, I kind of got the bug and that business struggled. And had a friend who worked in the business move to Clearlink. And they said, hey, you should come check this place out. And that's when I kind of formalized my career in SEO and content marketing and really sunk my teeth into what we're going to talk about today. So I don't know that I chose it, but it happened that way.
Yeah, no one like as a child is like, I want to do SEO when I grow up. And at Clearlink, it must have been such an interesting time to be at the company because one, like as a team, you built a number of awesome web properties and then you also bought a number of awesome web properties. And I know there's been a lot of change at that company over the last few years, but just for our listeners, like what is Clearlink and what did you do there?
So for listeners, I'm a couple years removed. So take what I'm saying as a grain of salt. They could have shifted strategy to your point, Nate. But yeah, Clearlink, especially when I started, was really a performance marketing and sales business. And what that means in layman terms is they were paid a bounty for generating new customers for home services businesses, mainly internet, telecom, cable, home security, et cetera. So think of Dish Network, Comcast. So we used various, you know, digital marketing tactics primarily when I first started to drive inbound calls to our staffed call center. And ClearLink fronts the cost of all of this. And then when ClearLink delivers a new customer, they're paid, like I said, a bounty from their clients. And so when I started, there was only a handful of clients, but in the early 2010s, call it, there was this kind of heyday in those types of businesses, those home services businesses, realizing, hey, we don't have the expertise to go really aggressive into digital marketing and specifically customer acquisition, but there's a few shops, ClearLink being one of them, Red Ventures another, there's a handful of others now, Centerfield. These guys know what they're doing. Let's go work with them. And oh, by the way, they're going to front the cost. So it's simple for those clients to kind of model out, hey, what does a new customer cost? Because that's really complicated for a lot of businesses that are looking at LTV on contracts. And there's much more sophisticated models now than there was 15 years ago. But anyways, that's kind of the legacy, as I like to call it, ClearLink business. And then over time, to your point, we saw a need to basically build our own demand, because the risk in building client relationships and any type of business is that if one gets too big and they decide to pull the plug on the relationship, you know, you're kind of SOL as a service provider. And so over time, we saw a need to build our own demand. And that's where, you know, the genesis of properties like highspeedinternet.com, safewise.com, which is a home security, home safety website, cabletv.com, where all those came to be. And over time, we became very acquisitive, which is one of the reasons why we wanted to chat with you, Nate. It didn't work out for us to work together ultimately, but yeah, we did a few other acquisitions, big ones. The Penny Hoarder was the biggest one we did. A lot of people have heard of the Penny Hoarder. They do a ton of advertising on social. Did a few others in a number of other categories. And when I left, we had a portfolio of about 15, kind of what we call flagship web properties, mostly consumer comparison websites where we were driving clicks, advertising for a new set of clients at that point from the legacy business I was just covering.
The Penny Hoarder, that was an incredible outcome for that team. I think it was like $100+ million outcome, if I've read that correctly. So it's clear that ClearLink also had some money to throw or invest. But anyways, done talking about ClearLink, I want to talk about Vital Brands. So after ClearLink, you've decided to go out on your own. You've started Vital Brands, and I know you've got a couple of properties that you're building. Would love to just hear about what led you to starting Vital Brands, what made you want to go out on your own, and can you share one or two of those sites that you're working on now?
The thought process behind Vital Brands really was, hey, let's build a digital media business that's sort of multifaceted in its product offering. So not just offering affiliate or CPC deals to advertisers, but also producing content for sale. So think, I'll talk about Gym Bird here in a second, but think like our own owned fitness programming that we're selling directly to consumers, in addition to any number of other products that we intend to offer over time. But zooming out again, Vital Brands is a digital media business focused in the wellness space, which is quite broad. But think fitness, sleep and recovery, mental wellness, a number of other categories, nutrition and supplements. So we see like probably 5, 6, maybe 8 sort of buckets within the broader wellness category that we're really interested in. I don't know all the stats offhand right now. I should have pulled them up. But if you look at sort of global wellness industry trends, I mean, it's the growth has been tremendous. We like the idea of riding sort of that wave, that trend, as we build these digital media assets, not unlike what happened at ClearLink when we were sort of still riding the wave of home internet penetration, which is crazy to even think about that was still happening 15 years ago, but it really was. And that helped that business grow tremendously. And so we're trying to do a similar thing with Vital Brands. On that note, we, like I said, we do see opportunity in multiple categories within the wellness space. The one we're focused on primarily to start is fitness. And the brand that we're operating there is called Gym Bird, gymbird.com. And Gym Bird does what you'd expect it to do. We produce a bunch of really high value content. At least I believe so. We'll maybe get into that a little bit later too. You know, centered around equipment reviews, fitness app reviews, but also resources. So, you know, workout tips, routine tips, and we have a target audience of gym owners as well. And so in that regard, we're building the most comprehensive and sort of detailed gym directory in the country. And that just launched about a month ago. We're really proud of the work we've done there. We've got a long ways to go, but we produce a ton of content around gym owners and gym owners growing their business. And the gym directory is a place where we hope to connect potential new members to gym owners and gym, you know, executives, marketing plans over the years. Think Yelp, I guess, but we're focused in fitness and wellness. So we feel like we can provide more value in that space because we'll have depth of knowledge that Yelp, is trying to force fitness into restaurants. So yeah, Gym Bird, we're really proud of it. We're excited to grow in that space. And that's us in a nutshell. A long nutshell.
You've given me so many questions to ask. And by the way, for all of our listeners, Brett and the team at Gym Bird are crushing it. And I hadn't thought of that there's actually like two different customers you could target at Gym Bird. There's obviously like consumers that might be looking for the best compact treadmill, but then there's also like the B2B angle that I think could be a lot more valuable in the sense that I imagine like gym subscriptions, they're a high LTV product and you might be able to get paid a lot more by those gym owners. So that's really cool. And like, before I get too off track, is there eventually going to be, or could there be like a UGC component to this as well, where like consumers are leaving reviews or business owners are collecting reviews or they have profiles, things like that?
Yeah, we're kind of focused on building utility in the gym directory to start, meaning can you filter by the things you expect to filter and the accuracy of the data. So we have a team of about 6 folks who are literally going gym by gym to validate the data right now. And then we're going to one of the biggest fitness conferences in the world next week in LA. And we hope to meet with gym owners in person and have them, hey, log in and look at what data we have available for their gym and just validate. So really focused more on the consumer side, on the user side to start with. And that's what I was going to say when you called out sort of the two angles to the business, Nate, is I've thought of media, especially niche media, where I still think there's a lot of value to add, where it hasn't gotten so watered down with these listicles and stuff. Think of the really big media players that are just cranking out every listicle known to man because they have an insane domain authority and they can. I don't blame them, but we're really trying to niche down and add value in a way that's more human and sort of not scalable, if that makes sense. And that's maybe a thread we could take in terms of AI too at some point. But the point is, over time, I really thought of media in this context as B2C to B. You have to add value at the user level, meaning the folks who are reading your content, such that you can add value for your advertisers, or in this case, potential, you know, folks that are going to subscribe to a product in the B2B space that we're offering. It's an interesting balance. You know, you want to like maximize potential revenue, but you don't want your users that are coming for good fitness tips to be disenchanted by the fact that you're shoving some random supplement down their throat when they come to your site.
Well, it sounds like you're creating fantastically helpful and unique content. And I do want to really dig into that. But before we get there, I want to ask you like more broader about like the wellness space. Like, you don't have to be specific if you don't want, but I guess my question is, like, as you're thinking about wellness, which is a very big space, we've talked about like high LTVs, maybe like a two-sided market. Like, how else do you think about like the different like industries that you would want to build in? Or like, how do you prioritize them given that wellness, it could mean a bunch of different things. It could be Ozempic, it could be massages, it could be supplements. Like, how do you pick like what to focus on first?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It just so happens one of our founders already owned the Gym Bird property before we started the business. And so we had some ideas about where to go with fitness early. So that was one reason we started there. It doesn't really answer your question in the broader sense. Beyond that, I'm not sure, Nate. I think we really tried to build this business in a way that suits our lives and our interests. At risk of sounding naive or not, you know, super data driven, that has been a driving factor for us. What do we find most interesting in terms of what's next? And the reason why we can from a business perspective think that way is because there is such vast opportunity in the wellness space, and so we have the benefit of sort of picking and choosing, at least right now, where we want to go next. And so for us, I think the next one would be sleep and recovery, because our team is really interested in those topics, you know. And sleep, of course, sleep is its own beast. In recovery, you know, there's all sorts of things like massage guns and ice baths and all that stuff, saunas, and still high LTVs for those products. And so potential, you know, meaningful advertising relationships, or, you know, our own internal sort of products that we can build to bridge the gap between consumers and advertisers there too.
We should have blocked out like 4 hours for this podcast recording. And it's interesting you mentioned sleep, because we had like a guest on the Optimize podcast, Nemanja from Sleep Advisor.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
He sold the company, but over the years, we've seen a lot of sites in the sleep industry just get their teeth kicked in.
Totally. I remember the sleep industry was the first big one in the whole affiliate disclosure dilemma years ago. That wasn't even 5 years ago or something, was it?
Time flies when you're having fun. I do want to talk about content and helpful content than the content that you're creating. And I think you and I have always seen eye to eye on content, like that it should be good and helpful. And that's important when it comes to ranking and search. And I don't think I'm saying anything new here, but actually on LinkedIn recently, I saw that you published a recent article, and this is just one example, about Orange Theory Fitness, and that you actually went to Orange Theory Fitness for 30 days to write this review. And so I guess my question to you is that helpful content?
Yeah. So I'm still going to Orange Theory. Writing that article was the sort of the nudge that I needed to join. And I'll join other gyms here too and do something similar, I think, over time. That piece is ranking page one, I think, for Orange Theory Review now, or Orange Theory Fitness Review, maybe both. So hopefully that answers your question a little bit. Yeah. So basically what I did there, before I answer your question, is I went 3 or 4 times a week for 30 days. And literally anything I thought of or I noticed, I just wrote a note in my phone when I was done. So I do the workout for 60 minutes, then I get in my car and I just write notes. So I had, by the time I was done with 20 workouts over 30 days or whatever it was, you know, I had this copious amounts of notes, 10 pages plus of notes in my notes app. And then our SEO built this awesome copy brief, which we have an amazing copy brief process now. I don't know if we'll have time to get into the nitty gritty of it, but so he had a copy brief. I had my notes, and then I just sat down and kind of stream of consciousness. If someone was asking me as a member, if they should join Orange Theory, what are all the things that I might tell them if they really wanted to like nerd out on the topic? And so I used the copy brief as an outline. If I would have filled in everything in the copy brief, that article, I think it right now is like 7,000 words or something insane. I think it would have been 20,000 words. So I had to kind of cut it off at some point. I really did try to think about it as a one-to-one conversation. And just my general approach in life and business, whatever, is to be authentic. And so when I write, I try to be conversational and whatever else. So I sure hope it's helpful. It's certainly, I would guess, not helpful to everyone that lands on it. It might be a little too much for some people, but I did try to write that in a way that demonstrated, you know, that I was attending the gym, but also that I was trying to offer insights that someone couldn't just get from the Orange Theory website.
Subtle flex, Brett. You are on the first page for Orange Theory Review. So congrats. And this sounds like the complete opposite to another website that I recently looked at. So I talked to someone and they were in the hair loss, men's hair loss treatment, medication space, comparison space. And like this individual, like, of course, has not tried like all of these hair loss supplements or medications. And so it would be very hard for them to write like uniquely helpful and personal content about a given hair loss treatment. But your piece of content, it almost reminds me of like Brian Dean Backlinko style content, where from my perspective, it felt like I was having a conversation with you. And I think that's what made Brian's content and Backlinko so successful, is that I often felt like I was having a conversation with Brian.
And he was one of the first ones to use those really short like sentences in a really effective way too. I thought like those page breaks made his content so easy to read too. I loved his content.
You're about halfway into this week's episode of the Optimize podcast, and I just want to let you know about our buyer journey product. It's a really cool one, and it just came out. It gives you insight into where users are traveling throughout your website. You can look at entry and exit flows. So for example, if you want to see all of the different pages that a user has traveled down by the time they've reached your book a demo page, you could do that. Or for example, if you want to see the pages that users go down or travel through after reaching your homepage, you can see that too. Positional's buyer journey product is meant to give you insights in terms of how users are engaging with your site and how they ultimately end up to their final destination. We'd love for you to check it out at positional.com. And now back to the rest of this week's episode. Yeah, we chatted about user experience a bit. We had him on the podcast a few months back, and he did a little victory lap around, like, you know, user experience signals and why they matter. But, and you mentioned before that, like, your team is out there doing, like, in-depth research, collecting data from different gyms that's not, like, publicly available. And so it sounds like you're putting a lot of work into making your content and the pages on your site uniquely helpful, which, like, I think is so important. And I do want to ask, we're going off script here. You mentioned content briefs and you've got a fantastic process for building them. So, like, our listeners wouldn't let me not ask you this question. What is a fantastic content brief? How do you build one? What should we be thinking about?
So we just have over time, through decade plus of experience in this space, we've come to sort of land on, and we tweak it over time, of course, too, but what we view as the most helpful content brief to writers that actually gets at what we're looking for in terms of the delivery of the final product. And now with sort of, you know, ChatGPT in particular, but other AI tools out there, we've been able to sort of bridge sort of the keyword research and the Google Doc. So the keyword research being like the first part of the process in the copy brief. I'm going to oversimplify this. In the Google Doc, which is what we use to deliver copy briefs to writers, being the final piece, we've been able to automate all the steps in between through use of Google Sheets and prompts to tools like ChatGPT and our own personas and everything like that. I wouldn't do this justice right now, but Dwayne Hogan, who, if folks who listen to this don't follow on LinkedIn yet, they should seek Dwayne out. I think he has posted at least a sneak peek at what I'm getting at, because he is the kind of the mind behind what I'm speaking about. But it's really cool. You basically plug in your topics. We have our personas, you know, H1s, title tag, recommendations. And of course, all of those change over time as we optimize content once it goes live. But to build the core copy brief, all that's kind of fed in. It builds the outline and the description for the writer to follow and drops it automatically into Google Docs and allows us to then ship that off to writers in our project management tool all seamlessly without having me go in there and build a copy brief. Because if you've ever done copy brief building manually, it's quite tedious. You can't really skimp on it because you want your content to turn out well. And so it ends up taking a long time just to validate, make sure you got everything. And so this has been huge for our processes.
I don't mean to flex, but you already did. We at Positional rank on the first page for content outline SEO. So I will take that as a win. But yeah, Dwayne, he's great. He should actually come on this podcast. Dwayne, if you're listening, you should come on the Optimized podcast. Let's do a whole 45-minute jam session on copy briefs. And we will include a link over to Dwayne's LinkedIn in the show notes. So all of our listeners, go follow Dwayne. He's great. Another clear link alum, I think, right?
He left a while before I did, but yeah, he was there for quite a while.
I know that, like, you've got Jim Bird. I imagine at some point you're going to have like 50 properties. I'm confident in that. How do you build teams around each of these properties? And before you answer that, I'll say that, like, I've tried to build multiple properties at once myself, but the problem that I've run into is that, like, one or two of the properties just don't get the attention they deserve and no one cares about them and they're not as successful as they could be. And we end up like scrapping the project and 301ing it somewhere else. So that's been my experience. But I guess my question back to you is, how do you build like teams around each of these properties to ensure that they're really kind of succeeding to the level that they could?
Yeah, that is tricky. At ClearLink, keep in mind, I referenced the legacy business, you know, the performance marketing and sales business that was generating cash capital that allowed us to build the first properties internally in that business. There are real constraints in any business to doing multiple projects at once. And unfortunately, to do them well, to your point, you kind of need focus. And what that means is, in most cases, more money to fund a team that's appropriately focused on the new property. That said, we had a lot of trial and error at ClearLink, building net new teams versus doing just asset acquisitions, meaning we just bought the property, no team came with it. You know, maybe it was like a partner duo that ran a property and we just bought it from them and then built a team around it. But in those cases, again, those things were churning off cash already. So we were able to make an investment with kind of an idea of what the return would be over the coming years. And then from a net new perspective, similarly at ClearLink, we had properties that were doing really well. So we kind of had like a grow and invest strategy. Now, that said, for Vital Brands, we have, you know, real meaningful capital constraints. We can't just go build 10 properties tomorrow. And so we've really focused on being as operationally efficient as we can. So like, as simple as it sounds, the copy brief process is a real deal. Because, you know, when we first started the business, before we had that built out, I'd sit down and do a copy brief. It would take me 40 minutes sometimes. You know, you get distracted or whatever. It legitimately could take you 40 minutes, an hour. And now it takes, you know, a few minutes. And so those are things we've really focused on. And that's where our AI focus has been, actually, is more about connecting the dots and building efficiencies in our business, as opposed to producing an output that we then publish, as an example, on our websites, which we don't really believe in. All that said, we focus on building contract relationships with people in our network, since the team was vast at ClearLink and we made a name for ourselves, our co-founders in this Vital Brands team, across the industry, just not just in home services, but also in digital media. You know, we became fairly well connected. So we're able to find really good talent that wants to work remotely, that gets what we're trying to do. And there's more people who have done this work now than 10 years ago. So they're easier to find. So we scale through contract and we're really clear about priorities and we try to be as efficient as possible.
In a perfect world, does each property have like a CEO, or is it okay to split that CEO across multiple properties?
I think in a perfect world, you have like a GM, yeah, who's responsible, like the buck stops with that person, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I wasn't going to bring it up, but now we have to talk about it. AI generated content, like you mentioned that you're not maybe a huge fan, and I'm not either. Like, our listeners know this by now. We had a guest on the podcast a few weeks ago, Alex from Greg, and they're having a ton of success with AI generated content, but they're pairing it with what is an extremely unique data source that they have, which is like their UGC generated content. And so the content that they're creating with AI is, I guess, AI generated, but like the core of it, like the foundational layer, is like their UGC content portfolio. And they couldn't create the AI generated content without the UGC content that exists on their platform. And they're having a lot of success. And so I wonder, like, if your site eventually collects what is like a large amount of user generated content, could there ever be like an opportunity to use AI to maybe synthesize that into a piece of content?
Certainly. And I think you're saying maybe more succinctly what I was getting at, which is I see AI as a supplement to content potentially, but not as a singular source. Yeah. Because we've even talked about that. And, you know, there's a lot of fitness terms to go down the fitness path, because that's what we're working on right now, that people don't know. Do we want to build a glossary, for example? Would we use AI to build the glossary, at least at scale? Maybe we would. Maybe it's not super valuable though either, because people could find that information somewhere else. But those are types of debates we're having. Now we also have the Gym Finder tool live. And so that means there's literally, you know, 75,000 city pages or whatever it is that we want to be indexed. I think we're at 25,000 or something like that right now. Would we supplement some of the content that's unique to us with some AI created content that's sort of building uniqueness within a given city? Maybe. But we'd also want to be really careful we don't go down that whole spun content, duplicate content path either. So,
yeah, you know, us SEOs that have been in the game for a while know that AI generated content has existed for a while. It's just gotten better over time. I want to ask you an extremely specific and tactical question that I don't know the answer to, because you mentioned indexing. So you've got, like, I think you said 25,000 pages indexed. There's a lot more that you'd like to get indexed. And a lot of our customers at Positional will run into indexing issues. I'm not going to name any names. I've seen a lot of our customers have success indexing their pages with the indexing API, which is supposed to be used for jobs and events. But I've seen quite a few companies using the indexing API to get.
I've seen that too. Yeah.
programmatic pages indexed. And like, I haven't seen Google comment on this. And I guess they ask me like, are we going to get in trouble? And I'm like, I have no idea. So like, do you have any thoughts on like using the indexing API as it isn't intended to be used for indexing?
We don't use it that way, but I have seen or read about folks doing that. And I've been really curious about it, to be honest. We haven't gone down that route because as of yet, we've seen good progress with sort of, I'll call it natural indexation. We're greasing the wheels a few different ways, but we've seen good traction. And so we haven't really discussed trying the whole API deal, but yeah, I've heard people having success with that. I don't know if they'll get in trouble. I don't feel like they would, but
I think Google's got to do something about it because there's tools now that exist to use the indexing API inappropriately. And so people are building businesses on this hack. And I don't think anyone's going to get in trouble. I think Google's just got to think about this, but maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't care at all. I think they have bigger things to worry about. Like Gemini, like that was a total like dumpster fire. So they've got bigger fish to fry, I think. Anyways, greasing the wheels. How do you grease the wheels into content indexing? I have to ask.
Well, we build a lot of links, which helps. We take internal linking seriously, which I know you guys do it, positional.
Okay. Yeah. You're speaking my language.
We do use some indexation tools to help index the site too. As far as I know, they don't use the API, but the way you said that, now I need to go ask.
Well, there's a couple different approaches to indexing tools. And
yeah,
then we'll save that for the next time you're going to come on the podcast, which will be at some point in the future. I do want to ask really quickly, how important are backlinks in 2024? More or less important than they used to be?
I think equally as important. Yeah. I think content quality and backlinks to me is still, that's the name of the game, really.
People make SEO too complicated. It's really just like three things, like pick the right keyword, create good article, and build a couple backlinks and you'll be successful.
Well, and you have to commit, pick what you want to write about and then create the content. But there's a lot lost in that kind of step, unfortunately, for a lot of people.
Regarding algorithm updates, a lot of our listeners were pretty negatively impacted in the helpful content update. As far as like building back after the helpful content update, how would you think about it if you were negatively impacted from that?
I don't know I'm the best resource for the helpful content update specifically as it relates to bouncing back, but generally my recommendation would be honest with yourself about what content you produced. A lot of times you get upset about, and believe me, I've been in this position, you know, being negatively impacted by an algorithm update. But when you really like take a breath and look at the content that was impacted, a lot of times, 95% of the time, it's not as good as it could have been. And so the first question in my mind would be, is all of the content you've produced on your site negatively impacted or not, actually what you think you should have produced to speak to the users or the demo or however you think about potential customers that you want to? And if not, obviously you can trim stuff. And if it is, then create a framework to improve the content in a way that's actually meaningful for users and try to forget about the algorithm while you're going through that process. I like frameworks and content because it makes it easier to scale. And also it makes it simpler in my mind to build a standard around quality. And what I mean by that is really simple things like, what does a typical content outline look like and what does it include? In the context of helpful content, did you interview experts? Are you an expert? No. Did you interview experts? Is that content in there? Maybe you add that block. You know, I could brainstorm a bunch of ideas right now. I don't think that would be super useful use of our time. But the point is, I think I would build some sort of framework to improve the content that was thematic around the site and really press to improve the quality from a user perspective. That's kind of what I would recommend. It's pretty high level and vague, but unfortunately I think any of these kind of bouncing back conversations really boil down to doing the hard work.
The older I've gotten, the more I listen to Google and I just try to do what's best for the searcher. And usually that starts with helpful content. I like that you've mentioned sourcing. Like, I think we could all think like journalists. Like if a journalist was writing an article about the best treadmills, they would actually go out and talk to an expert, or they would try one, or they would take great photos in that process. And so we all need to think like journalists, maybe not some journalists, but some journalists. I think I've got some really good lightning round questions. Are you ready for it?
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So last year on LinkedIn, you mentioned that BuzzFeed might make for a great acquisition candidate. At the time, the company was valued at $79 million. Today, the company is worth a lot less than that. Do you think BuzzFeed could still be a good acquisition candidate? And if so, why?
I had it pulled up earlier. I think it's maybe 40 something million now. My point there was, and I think we've seen, if you're following media in general, which I obviously do, I'm in the space. And so I've been watching kind of the evolution. And it's not unlike what happened in technology too. Like there was this huge run up of expectations because there was an immense amount of capital available. And obviously interest rates were really low. So this is sort of a macro trend, not just one to media. But people got out ahead of their skis on valuations on media companies. And so my point was, hey, look at their P&L. Their SG&A expenses were like $750 million a year or something like that. And they were losing $500. I don't remember the exact numbers. But the point is, like, how can someone not go in there and try to do a takeover and cut out a bunch of costs? Clearly, their assets are worth more than $25 million. We could debate why, but I feel pretty strongly that they are. And now what's happened is I think since I posted that, or even pretty recently, they've had to divest, or they're starting to divest a number of those assets because their market cap doesn't reflect the actual value of their business. So let's go buy it.
I don't know. I don't play at 35 cent stocks.
Yeah.
All of our listeners, this is not financial advice. What is one website that you absolutely love and why?
Man, that's a hard one. We used to ask this as a interview question years ago, and I always expected a really good answer. I don't have a good answer. I can't, if I came up with something, it would be on the fly, and then I'd regret saying the one website. Honestly, I don't have one.
It's okay. I'll go. Jim Bird. Great. We'll include a link back to it in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks.
So SGE, like, are we all totally screwed in 2 years from now? Yes or no?
I think it's just another iteration. I mean, the things that motivate me are good, authentic, fun, engaging human interactions, learning new things, and progress. And so, like, I think all signs point to those things happening, interestingly enough, in the search experience. And so for me, I'm not too worried about it. We'll figure it out as it comes. And some of the stuff has been pretty interesting, even though they've been catching a lot of flack and sort of the results and the accuracy of results. I like that it's leaning towards more real, quote unquote, results and less large brand, large media results. I think it's interesting, and I don't think we're all doomed. I think we'll just tweak our strategy, and there'll be more of an emphasis on this helpful content stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah, we talk a lot of crap about Forbes on this podcast. Forbes, if you're listening, would love to give you a demo of Positional. You've bought a lot of properties in your career at ClearLink. And I guess my question is, what makes for a good acquisition candidate?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, if it's literally just, you know, organic search as a primary driver of traffic, those can be tricky. But like a really simple answer is those businesses are worth 2 to 5 times their earnings. And you really shouldn't buy them for more than that, in my opinion, because there is significant risk in all of the, especially now, in all these kind of changes in the search landscape. And that's not necessarily new, but the types of changes now are so big, vast, that I would be reluctant to pay any more than that for, you know, a search focused web property. But, you know, it always helps if they have digital products or, you know, some sort of recurring revenue. But this is all sort of typical acquisition speak, you know what I mean? So is there upside and confidence that there's limited downside? And typically that comes with some sort of recurring revenue or unique value proposition in the market.
My final question, because I know you're like one of the best when it comes to content creation processes, and I've learned a lot from you in that regard. What's the biggest mistake you see content teams make in the content production process?
The biggest one is just, you got to pick and go. Like, there's too much dabbling and not a committed strategy. That's my number one thing I see. There's always, no matter what industry you're in, there's a ton of opportunity. There's always more you could do, but you really have to pick and commit for some period of time. And that will allow you to build the depth and, you know, the helpful content stuff we've been talking about in a way that's valuable to your users, as opposed to just throwing stuff at the wall or picking random topics because there's too many to choose from.
Well, Brett, this has been so much fun. I had a blast. Thank you for coming on the Optimize podcast. Is there anything else you want to say to our listeners?
No, thanks for having me, Nate. Love to come on again, and yeah, love the show. So appreciate being on.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Optimize podcast. Just a quick reminder that Positional's public launch is on March 26th, and we'd love for you to check it out. On March 26th, you'll be able to sign up for our product without talking to me, which is very exciting. And we've got a number of tools for content marketing and SEO teams, including tools for keyword research, internal linking, content analytics, and our new Buyer Journeys product, which I think you're really going to like. So check out positional.com either before the public launch or on our launch day on March 26th.